Exchange 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Israel is on high alert as it braces for a potential attack from Iran. The U.S. sending assets to the region, including a guided missile submarine and an aircraft carrier to help its main ally in the region defend itself.
I think we've been very clear that we're going to support the defense of Israel, and I'm not going to speculate about potential future attacks by Iran.
Pentagon spokesman Major General Pat Ryder, CIA Director Bill Burns, and other U.S. officials are headed to the Middle East. They're hoping to de-escalate tensions and get ceasefire negotiations back on track. President Biden announcing $150 million for a major part of the Cancer Moonshot Project in a visit to Tulane Medical Center in New Orleans. The DARPA-H project is designed to improve sharing in health research. Russia says its forces stopped an effort by Ukrainian troops to disband into the Kursk region. This is ABC News. A former Central Kansas police chief who led a raid last year on a weekly newspaper has been charged with felony obstruction of justice. Right place, right time. A Southeast Texas woman is recovering from a medical emergency that resulted in a life-threatening crash.
On a rural highway 3 weeks ago, Jonquetta Wimbush suffered a seizure and drove into a pond. She was unconscious, but her two kids escaped before the car sank. Her son flagged down a police officer.
Come on, hop in.
Only the roof of the car was visible, but police and bystanders got the woman out. 3 weeks later, Jonquetta Wimbush is off a ventilator and breathing on her own. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Consumer spending and small businesses rebounded in July after a drop in June. The Fiserv Small Business Index rose 1 point in July compared to June, and sales rose 3.5% compared to a year ago. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
CapTime's Idea Fest is back for a week of powerhouse speakers and sessions exploring important local and national topics. September 15th through the 21st in Madison. This year's guest speakers include Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, former member of Congress Liz Cheney, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and historian Heather Cox Richardson, along with many others. Idea Fest brings together changemakers to discuss Wisconsin's triumphs and failures to help reach a better state. Purchase your tickets today at CapTimesIdeaFest.com to join this premier thought festival.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. One hiccup in Wisconsin on primary election day, the first vote since new legislative maps went into effect. Voters in the Douglas County town of Summit had the wrong assembly district on their ballots. Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf says there's nothing in state law about what happens next.
And so the county clerk, the municipal clerk, and the ballot canvassers, the chief inspectors, they're all going to have to work together in part of a public process to figure exactly what the best course of action is going to be here.
The mistake affects no more than about 700 voters. Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance will visit Milwaukee Friday. That's according to the Donald Trump campaign. He's expected to speak at the Milwaukee Police Association. Vance was in Eau Claire last week. That's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
It's the Brewers and the Dodgers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game two of the series between L.A. and Milwaukee tonight at AmFam Field. The Crew losing game one last night 5-2. The Dodgers' Shohei Ohtani with a home run that traveled 424 feet. And Mookie Betts, back in his first game since breaking his left hand, had a two-run homer with three RBI. Manager Pat Murphy.
You know, two of the best players in the game hit a home run. I thought Freddie Peralta was fantastic, but the four runs came on two infield hits and two home runs. And again, granted, another great player got the hit. But we had our opportunity, you know, to do that.
College football, the Badgers competition at quarterback continues. Tyler Van Dyke versus Braden Locke. Head coach Luke Fickell says it's a good problem to have.
As everybody wants to ask about the quarterback position and who's number one and who's number two, where I feel as good as anything is we've got two really good, really capable quarterbacks.
That's Luke Fickell with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening showers, otherwise partly cloudy tonight and a low in the mid-50s. And mostly sunny and warm again tomorrow, highs in the low 80s. Then showers and storms developing for tomorrow night. Thursday, a little breezy and cooler, high upper 60s. Right now it's 78 degrees.
Crude and Dom. Tune in to the Devil's Advocates for a whopper of a Wednesday edition. We'll have all the electoral results in the great state of Wisconsin and our friend Bill Press in the happier happy hour. Devils. The Devil's Advocates. Weekdays 4 till 6. The Buzz of the North. 910 AM WBZH.
Hey everyone, it's producer Conrad. Hope you're having a good Tuesday. Pete's on vacation this week. I put together some great interviews with some great guests. Tonight we have interviews from Charlie Behrens and Thomas Lennon. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, so it's great to meet you. It's great to have you on the show. You were in my adopted hometown recently of Marinette, Menominee. Doing some diving, as I understand it. How did that go?
Well, it went really good. I went out with Ed the Diver.
Yeah.
Great fella. And we went out there about an hour in the river on the Wisconsin side of the river. And pulled out what must have been probably 150 lures that, you know, you guys have lost out there. And plus some trash here and there. Ed's a great guy. He cleans up the rivers.
Yeah.
And in the process of cleaning them up, he finds a lot of great fishing lures. He then refinishes them and sells them again. So you guys should follow him, Ed the Diver, on Instagram and whatnot. Great fella.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's been on the show, and some of the stuff he's done is so cool, and his videos are great. Like, he's, you know, showing videos of himself petting a sturgeon and showing these little sea creatures I've never even seen before. So,
what I like about him is he gives a real connection to, like, the waterways and gets people thinking about it in a different way, which I think is great.
Absolutely. So I got to tell you, one of the first videos I saw that you, I don't know if it was one of your first videos, one of the first ones I saw, you were crossing the street in New York City. He said, in your awesome Wisconsin accent, watch for deer. I stopped laughing a week ago Tuesday. But how cool is it, and how difficult was it to shoot a YouTube video on the streets of New York City?
Oh, honestly, not that difficult, believe it or not, because, you know, I was not even in the top five strangest things going on. in New York at any given place at any given time. You know, there are people doing stuff all over that city. So you can really do whatever you want, honestly, and people will be like, oh, it's New York, I suppose. They say it with a harder accent, though.
Right, right, absolutely. You and I, actually, I don't know if you know this, we have a lot in common. I have well over 200 Twitter followers, and you have well over 2 million on YouTube. We should compare notes sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should. It's just a matter of zeros in that regard.
Yeah, I'll give you a few pointers. How long did it take you? You're like a YouTube. You're a YouTube phenom. I wasn't overstating. That's incredible. How long? You haven't even been at stand-up that long. So, like, how long did that take you to get that kind of a following?
Really, when I started posting in... on a regular basis, we started off with the Manitowoc Minute in 2017. And I was posting before that. I was working this job. I was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do my own thing. So I kind of made it my mission to say, all right, every week I'm going to do Every week I'm going to do a sketch video until something takes off. And I did a bunch of them and none of them took off. But then I did the Manitowoc Minute and that took off. And so I kept doing that for about a year, I can't remember. And then I started branching off into sketch. And then, at that time, I was also doing stand-up. And within 6 months of doing the first Manitowoc Minute video, I mean, I started selling tickets for stand-up. I got really lucky, and I think it happened at the right time. And I think there weren't a lot of people doing what I was doing. So that was kind of the recipe for something really unique and really life-changing for me.
Well, and for your fans too, it's just, I mean, I was hearing about it before I even heard of you. Like, people were literally, it spread that fast. I was like, man, I got to check this out. You said you were working something else. What were you doing before you did that? What did you have, like, a day job or something?
Oh yeah. I had a lot of day jobs. I'll tell you that much. I was at that point doing like red carpet stuff. And I was like a producer doing news. I was in the news game. Local news, comedy news, YouTube news, business reporting, all sorts of news jobs that, and that was the basis for the Manitowoc Minute, because I had all this, at all these gigs I was doing, the common theme was that my accent was not really conducive with professional journalism all the time. So I just kind of doubled down on that, and that's where the Manitowoc Minute came from.
It's funny because I don't really hear that when you're just talking normally to me, but
no,
it's still, and yeah, go ahead.
I literally had a voice coach because I had a very thick accent. Well, I say very thick, but I didn't think it was ever very thick. I just think that there are certain words that really stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah,
as far as the accent goes, you know, especially because I was doing it in Texas at this point. So it was very different from that. Oh, and that was after having like a voice coach to help me do it. So I was trying to talk normally. I just failed enough times. And then when I started doing it comedically, you know, everything with comedy is you kind of take a truth and you heighten it.
Right.
Not everything, but that's one tactic for comedy. So what I did is I took the issues I had with journalism. I mean, I literally had somebody say I couldn't do voiceovers because of my accent, you know?
Wow.
And so I was annoyed about that, but I was annoyed by that for quite a while. And that was sort of the basis for this stand-up bit. And I think that's the cool thing about comedy is, your imperfections are perfect for comedy, you know, because imperfections are relatable to somebody usually.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. Well said. I love, you did a bit too, where you talked about on stage, and I think you said it was a professor who told you he was the one that pointed out where you realized you had an accent. Cause that's how it is. Like, we go somewhere and I never thought I had an accent, and I spent part of my life in Chicago. So I think I have a hybrid, but you always think you talk normally and they're like, oh man, where are you from? Like, you've offended them or something. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's certain words they'll give you away, or you start drinking and then you go like, I think we're always trying to sort of adapt to our surroundings. and unless you start drinking, then you forget about it. And you kind of go back to sort of your baseline accent, right. You know, so.
Yeah, you sounded like a surfer 2 minutes ago. What happened, man? You sound like Rick Moranis from Honey. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see it with your friends with Southern accents, too. You know, they kind of talk standard, but then they'll say like a couple phrases and you're like, oh, yeah. You're not from here.
So let me ask you this. You've done really well with the accent, poking fun at your home state and all that. I made a film a few years ago and I had characters that had Wisconsin accents and people like chastised me. They're like, we don't talk like that. Like, why are they embracing it for you and coming after it?
Well, Not everybody does. Not everybody
really?
Does.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some people that think that, like, we don't talk like that.
Yeah.
And they're usually saying, like, you know, we don't talk like that. I tell you what, you know, that's garbage right there. I think, I mean, from a comedy perspective, I'm doing, like, the Manswag main character is very sketch, kind of a sketch comedy thing where you're not exactly always doing it the exact way people say it. You know, it's not always the most grounded thing intentionally. You kind of exaggerate to highlight the comedy on it.
Yeah.
And so, that's one thing. But the other thing is that there are definitely people that talk like, have even thicker accents than the most exaggerated parts of my accent, and I know that because I'm related to some of them. So, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and I can't tell anyone how to feel about one thing or another, but, you know, it is kind of what it is.
My guest is Charlie Behrens, the creator of the Manitowoc Minute and all kinds of incredible content that you can find all over social media. You are on a tour right now, Charlie. You want to tell us about where you're going to be? Where can people see you? The good old fashioned tour?
Yeah. I'm on a little bit of a break this summer, but I'm going to be I'm going to be up north at the Lumberjack Festival, Chippewa Falls in July, doing the fair up there. And then come fall, I'm going to be back on tour officially, and we'll kind of be a little bit of everywhere. So if you check it out, it's charliebehrens.com or manitowocminute.com. You just click on the tour section of either of those websites. Thanks for letting me plug. That was really nice of you.
Yeah, what are we doing here, you know? So you talked about, like, the people that are in your lives that you got this accent from or these characters from. Where does the Manitowoc Minute character come from? Just from working in news? And did you, like, bring characters from your family into that when you created it?
Yeah, the character itself is a hodgepodge of family and friends that I knew with very, you know, just kind of salt of the earth Wisconsin people. It's right. A bit of a hodgepodge. My grandpa, Bob, it was a big influence on it. And the reason I called it the Manitowoc Minute, not because I'm from Manitowoc, although I got family from Trivers, Ed Burns, the guy who made invented the ice cream sundae, by the way, related to him. Great, great, great uncle.
Oh, nice.
Somewhere in there. My grandma knows the full story. I get the details wrong. But there was a guy at a stand-up show I was doing. Actually, I was doing it in Los Angeles. That fellow was from Manitowoc. And I had just gotten done doing this great set at the Comedy Store, and I was a little bummed out because, like, it was a great set, but only, like, 50 people saw it. One of the people who saw it was that guy from Manitowoc. So the next day, I was trying to do, like, almost a sketch, the first Manitowoc Minute, but I didn't have a name for it, so I named it after that guy. And that's where the name Manitowoc came from, in the Manitowoc Minute.
That's great. Is one of the coolest things about the level of fame you've reached that you get to cook brats with Christian Yelich in a YouTube video?
I mean, yeah, that is really nice. I get spoiled. I really do. I've gotten so many cool opportunities that I can't even believe. I can't believe that they've happened. And I can't almost not believe they're happening when they're happening. You know, I feel very lucky.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This history can't be denied. Wisconsin is the home of the hamburger. About 30 minutes west of Green Bay, you'll find the city of Seymour, where in the 1880s, young Charlie Nagreen pushed his food cart to the fair. The 15-year-old planned to sell round balls of beef to visitors, but it didn't quite catch on. Can you guess the surprising reason why? The answer's coming up.
Every summer, the home of the hamburger celebrates its history in a huge way with Burger Fest in Seymour. There's a 200-pound burger on the grill, a bun, run, ketchup slide, and of course, a burger-eating contest. So did you guess why Charlie's first beef recipe didn't work out? Well, as the story goes, visitors to the fair wanted to walk around. Charlie realized he needed to smash his beef ball between two pieces of bread to be able to eat it on the go. Charlie's hamburger, a huge success, making Seymour the home of the hamburger, a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Seen her dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you.
Great to have you with us on this amazing, fun summer night here in Wisconsin. We are broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay. I'm very excited to welcome this next guest to Nightlight. I've been excited to have him on for a while, but he's a very busy guy, but he has been gracious enough to join us tonight via stream. You might know his work if you've watched Reno 911, where he plays Lieutenant Jim Dangle. I hope I'm getting the rank right. I think it's Lieutenant. He's also written The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, several other films, and he joins us tonight on Nightlight. Tom Lennon. Hey, Tom.
Pete, it is great, great, great to see you, Pete.
You too, and buddy.
Talk to you.
You know, it's weird. Most of the way I keep in touch with people now that live on either coast are on this show over the StreamYard. So I'll take it, man. If this is all I get of Tom Lennon, I'm thrilled to have you.
The weird detail, though, is I'm not really that far away from you.
Oh, no. Where are you?
I'm in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
You know what? I saw that.
You know I live in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, right?
I didn't know you live there. I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Like full time?
Exactly what douchey Illinois people are supposed to do.
Well, you're better off. No, we used to go up to when I grew up in Chicago, we'd go up to Three Lakes and Eagle River. So you're
my mom grew up going to Eagle River, and they would go up and the big thing to do at the time at Eagle River is they would go watch bears at the garbage dump at night.
Yes.
Because the bears would come into the dump and you could just go watch the bears. And that was for a family of seven, which they were, that was a reasonably priced evening of Eagle River garbage dump bear watching.
With the hint of just enough of a hint of danger to make it exciting. That's
oh, for sure.
I know your parents because I've met them a few times because they would come to screenings of the film we did together, The Godfather of Green Bay. They're very nice people.
Anytime there was a screening of that, they've been at it. Yeah.
They were great. They were in Madison, Wisconsin,
yep.
And I was just blown away by that. It was so nice of them, and they are just lovely people. Are they in?
For a long time, they lived at in Williams Bay, which is the other side of the lake. We're on the south shore of the lake.
Yeah. Okay. That's a heck of a rivalry there when it comes to
for sure
high school
fencing. Well, it's a bummer they've got the Wrigleys on their side. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's north side of the lake's got south side of the lake's got me and Tito of Tito's, and then north side of the lake has Wrigleys and the Armor hot dog people.
Oh yeah,
there's it's more old-timey stuff on the north side of the lake. Yeah,
it would be really cool if you had like a contingency of Tito's, like Tito Puente, Tito Jackson, and like
we got to get some more Tito's on this side of the lake. Yeah, currently we just have one. I mean, we have a very good one, but
that's an impressive one. Yeah, you're there full time? Are you just kind of commute when you have to?
We lived here full time for the first 3 years that we lived here. Now we're back and forth to Los Angeles a little bit, but we're predominantly in Wisconsin just because I greatly prefer to be in Wisconsin. If I'm given a choice in the matter, I like being here. So,
well, good for you. I have to say, I've been here now 13 years, and I miss LA a lot. I miss Chicago at times. It's easier for me to get there, but it's so easy to live here, Tom. That's what makes it kind of enjoyable.
The quality of your life is just night and day between, one of the first days that we lived, we were out here at Lake Geneva and the lake had frozen over and we were walking out on the frozen lake and there was a weird sound that I was hearing and didn't know what it was. It was just a little tick, tick sound that kept happening. And then I found out what it was. And it was actually the sound of snowflakes that were landing on my hard shell jacket.
Oh my gosh, yes.
But it was so quiet that I could hear individual snowflakes landing on me. And I was like, wow, this is a really interesting, cool place to be.
It's like the most soothing sound ever. I know
it was
exactly
really
what you're
neat. Yeah,
about.
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. That adds a layer to this interview, which I wasn't anticipating. So welcome to Wisconsin.
No, I know. We can talk about all Wisconsin stuff. Thanks. Yeah. It's nice to be here.
On behalf of a fellow transplant. All right. I wanted to ask you, this is funny because I always think of you when I think about the time we worked together on The Godfather of Green Bay, which was
a great picture, by the way. If you haven't seen it, I mean, everybody's seen it by now at this point who listens to your show, but that's a great picture of The Godfather of Green Bay.
Well, let me say, just before I turn this into a total stroke fest, what you did with that part, Tom, that was a lesson for me because I had only written scripts that had been sold. Only one of them ever got made. And I didn't realize what an actor brought to a role. And I was not prepared for it until I saw you and Lance in those specific roles. But you, with the way you just improvised and you just brought something to it that was a real education for me as a director. I had never directed before either, but so the feeling is mutual. And you gave me
a great thing to run with, which was really fun, which is Doug, the stand-up comic who just despises the Chicago Bears, to me was like. I'm like, I just get this. I just know what this guy is. So I got all that really happened was you gave me a real weird haircut. I had such a strange hair. I have like a weird flat top in the movie, No, it looks really just weird. But I got this like that weird flat top. And then we would film in that so great. Funny. I love that little bar that we filmed. It was in Marinette. Where were we? Marinette.
Was that the bar was actually in Menominee, Michigan, about 3-4 miles out of town.
Oh,
yeah,
we were
right
in the UP.
Across the river. Yeah, right across the river.
Oh, I forgot we were in the UP.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful bar. And on the inside, it looked gorgeous. And
yeah, it was neat. It was really cool.
It was fun. I also remember you had a beeper that I think you added that, and that was just brilliant.
Did I? Okay, now I don't. Now I actually might need to watch it again, but that's a very good idea.
So this was kind of funny. We had an offer out to you, I remember, and another actor who was, pretty well known said that we had offered him a different role, which we already cast. He wanted to do this role. And so they made him an offer. And when we heard that you were interested, I was like, oh my God, pull the offer, whatever. And the producer.
Oh no, Brian, you fired somebody?
No, we didn't. No. And Brian said, no, you can't do that. We just have to hope this other guy passes. And he did. And we got you. And
I was thrilled
because you were also in another movie that I had co-written called The Guy Thing. And you were great in that. And then, but also as Dangle, you were phenomenal. And I thought, I think what happened was we made the offer to you, if I remember correctly, and you thought you knew me from A Guy Thing, but you didn't realize it was the other writers that had replaced us. So you said, okay, let's do it. And then you met me and you're kind of giving me this look. And I was like,
no, I don't know you. Yeah.
But you had had a long flight and a 3-hour car drive. I don't think you were turning around at that point. So,
no, although I think I flew into Green Bay. It wasn't actually that far.
I thought you flew into Milwaukee and some PA gave you a ride and talked your ear off.
I specifically remember flying into Green Bay.
Okay.
I don't know how that worked, but I did.
Well, we spared no expense. So
you spared no expense.
There's no.
Oh, man, that was a. I just remember one night we were sitting in the bar with Mark Borchard.
Yeah.
And it was like 2 or 3 in the morning at the bar that we were filming at. And Mark said, well, I got to go, guys. And we're like, Mark, where are you going? He's like, well, the liquor stores are closing. And it was like, Mark, we're sitting at the bar, man. It's like going to stay open for us forever. And then, no, it was just so interesting. He was an interesting cat. Yeah.
I'll tell you this about Mark. I've tried to have him on the show. And Mark has been sober like for, I want to say like 15 years or something like that now. He is like a great student of film. And I've tried to get him on this show, Tom. And he's like, Pete, man, it's not my thing. But he goes, I'm a huge supporter. Every tweet he shares, he is like a sweetheart of a guy, and he was so much fun on that set. But
it was fun. I might throw it on later tonight because I'm overdue. I'm very overdue.
Oh, when in Wisconsin, it's been a while for me too. So, all right, my guest is Tom Lennon. You know him possibly as Jim Dangle from Reno 911, a very funny writer and actor. He's joining us here tonight on Nightlight. We'll be back with more with Tom in just a minute. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a progress we have found, a way to talk around the problem. Building towered foresight isn't anything at all.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Israel is on high alert as it braces for a potential attack from Iran. The U.S. sending assets to the region, including a guided missile submarine and an aircraft carrier to help its main ally in the region defend itself.
I think we've been very clear that we're going to support the defense of Israel, and I'm not going to speculate about potential future attacks by Iran.
Pentagon spokesman Major General Pat Ryder, CIA Director Bill Burns, and other U.S. officials are headed to the Middle East. They're hoping to de-escalate tensions and get ceasefire negotiations back on track. President Biden announcing $150 million for a major part of the Cancer Moonshot Project in a visit to Tulane Medical Center in New Orleans. The DARPA-H project is designed to improve sharing in health research. Russia says its forces stopped an effort by Ukrainian troops to disband into the Kursk region. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A fatal attack on a counselor at Wisconsin's prison for boys led to new training for staff. That's according to Ron Hermes. He's the administrator for the Department of Juvenile Justice. He testified to the governor's Juvenile Justice Commission Tuesday. One study finds black farmers lost more than $300 billion worth of land in the 20th century, partly due to discriminatory government policies. The Inflation Reduction Act is now paying more than $2 billion to minority farmers, ranchers, and foresters.
You can put your blindfolds on, you can turn your head the other way, but the fact of the matter is it did happen. It's documented. It's not a secret, so let's address it.
That's Sharon Mallory, was with the 2020 Farmers Co-op, which is pushing for changes at the U.S. Agriculture Department. That's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The demolition of the former St. Mary's Medical Center in Duluth has officially begun. According to a Fox 21 report, demolition crews arrived at the East 4th Street site on Monday to begin tearing down one of the campus skywalks connecting the medical center to the other health buildings in the area. City officials are reminding residents to avoid the area during the month of August as a number of roads will be closed for the demolition work. The closures will affect areas of East 4th Street, 5th Avenue East, and 4th Avenue East. Duluth's new arena football team is taking home some hardware following their first season. According to a Fox 21 report, the Duluth Harbor Monsters became the first ever Arena Mania champions on Saturday night with a 46-44 victory over the Iowa Woo. Overall, the Harbor Monsters finished with a 7-3 record in their first season. Repeating as champions will be even harder for the team next year, as the league will grow to include new teams like Eau Claire and Arkansas. This year's season featured only four teams. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening showers, otherwise partly cloudy tonight at a low in the mid-50s. And mostly sunny and warm again tomorrow, highs in the low 80s. Then showers and storms developing for tomorrow night. Thursday, a little breezy and cooler, high upper 60s. Right now it's 78 degrees.
The Todd Allbus Show.
Chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Winkler. Now, I was involved in politics for 30 plus years. I've never seen anything in the state of Wisconsin like I saw in Eau Claire last week. 2 miles away from the venue, and there were cars parked alongside the road.
It's not just cities, it's rural places and small towns and medium-sized towns. It's everything. Voters realize in this moment they have the power to shape history.
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
Next up, I've got the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Ben Winkler, will be talking about the DNC and the implosion of the GOP. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
All right. Hanging out here. on a beautiful summer night here talking to my fellow Wisconsinite, I just learned, Thomas Lennon. Tom, yeah, so are you having a good summer?
It's been amazing. It's going by a little bit fast, but yeah, we've been having a beautiful summer. One kind of thing that's been kind of a neat thing, and we might get another one tonight, is down here in southeast Wisconsin, there was a period where we had 30 days of thunderstorms in a row this summer.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we also had a couple of tornadoes, yeah, which was scary, but I'm a guy who loves a Wisconsin thunderstorm.
Same.
And we just had them back to back to back to back to back to back. I mean, everything looks really lush. It kind of looks like we live in the Amazon right now here in southern Wisconsin. It's also, this week's been real, real toasty, but you know, it's lovely here. We get out on the boat when we can. There's kind of a lot to do around Lake Geneva. There's,
yeah,
a lot of stuff to do. We went into Summerfest in Milwaukee. We saw the Hold Steady. We've been doing cool Wisconsin stuff. We actually went into Summerfest twice, and then we went to, we were out in Madison, and we went to Taliesin. You ever been to Taliesin?
I have not, no.
About an hour west of Madison is the big house that Frank Lloyd Wright built for himself and his mistress.
Wow.
Which is pretty interesting. Yeah. And it's got a pretty interesting backstory. If you're ever an hour west of Madison, it's very close to House on the Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Have you ever been to Crazy Old House on the Rock?
Years and years ago, but I'm in Wisconsin fairly often, and I always mean to go over there and check it out, and I don't know why I haven't. I've been going down there every month for the last 12 years. For some reason, I haven't made it over there, but I hear it's amazing.
Taliesin's really beautiful. It's a really cool thing to see. Yeah. We wanted to go to House on the Rock, but I think somebody said there was a fire there. It might have been closed for a little bit.
Okay.
Something weird happened at House on the Rock. It was always a curious old place, up House on the Rock.
I think, yeah, it was the mistress that set the place ablaze, maybe.
That's actually kind of what happened. There was actually one of the butlers did burn down Taliesin with everybody in it. It's too dark of a story for nighttime radio. But okay. Yeah, if you're ever looking for a Stephen King bedtime story, look up what actually just happened at Frank Lloyd Wright's house in Spring Green.
Conrad, take a memo. We got to look into that. I see a potential guest.
It's intense.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah. Hey, Tom. All right, so I've been meaning to ask you this for years. I maybe asked you years ago on the set of the film, mm-hmm, of The Godfather Green Bay, but I don't, mm-hmm, remember what you said. Where did the inspiration for Jim Dangle come from?
You know, that was a weird one. It was sort of a character I'd done in stand-up a little bit. I had been, I'd done this character who was a recruiter for Space McDonald's, and he was sort of like Jim Dangle, basically, except he had an eye patch. That was really the only difference. And then when we started doing the show, we'd basically been writing a sketch show for Fox, and it got canceled, like, basically at the table read, and they're like, we don't want a sketch show. It doesn't help us at all, and we're like, oh, that's weird, because here we are and we have this cast and we have a budget and what
we
are
just
we
ordered
do?
A lunch.
Yeah, we're like, you just fired us and we're still lunch is coming. So we ended up, you know, we tried to come up with within 24 hours a show that would fit the Fox, you know, that would fit Fox on Saturday night. And you know, the biggest show on Fox on Saturday nights for 30 years was Cops,
right?
So you know, basically we were like, what if we just do like a sketch show that's like Cops? And it was a little more artsy fartsy in the pilot outing of it. Cause we in the pilot, we played all of the characters. So there was never anybody else in the show. So like we would be all of the perps and we were all of the cops. And it was designed to be more of like, it was just going to be like little sketches you would go to. And we would always play the characters that you'd meet, but the cops weren't really the focus of the show. You know, they were just sort of like the thing. They were basically the sort of the thing that got you from sketch to sketch of meeting like funny weirdos with mullets and stuff. And after we did the pilot, the cops became much, much bigger characters. And we also stopped playing all the perps. And so that's when it sort of really turned into, you know, what it's been then, what it was then for, you know, 124 episodes and three movies, which is a lot. Yeah.
That is such an incredible run.
It's been a big run. Yeah.
I can't even. And, you know, yeah. I was reading about, like, I think I just went to your Wikipedia page for looking for stuff about you I didn't already know. And what I didn't know is you and Carrie Kenny got together when you were 16 at a camp and met each other. And she was in Reno, too. And then it just became this
snowball of, like, did you ever think that show could be become what it was?
For sure, we never thought it would go 124 episodes, three movies. No. It's weird what you get known for, because Reno 911 is actually our third series, because the first one was The State. So Carrie and I have done, we did The State, which ran on MTV for quite a while. And then we did Viva Variety, which ran on Comedy Central for kind of a while. And then of course, a ton of shows in between that were just pilots that never got picked up. And then Reno, which didn't get picked up, because we actually did Reno for Fox and then they didn't pick it up. So it sort of sat there for like 3 years, and then Comedy Central saw a tape of it that we showed them, and they're like, oh, let's do this. So Comedy Central ended up buying the rights to it from Fox, where it just sort of languished for a long time. But yeah, I actually thought, you know, after we shot the pilot for Fox and it was not picked up, I was like, oh, that's dead. And, you know, it was interesting, because then that would become the show that I thought was dead would become, you know, basically the main job of the rest of the quarter century of my life.
Wow.
You know? So, yeah.
Did you? All right. So you're also, what I didn't know about you when I met you in person for the first time was, I think one of the producers said, oh yeah, Tom wrote, Night at the Museum, The Pacifier. He's also a big time screenwriter. I was like, what? Like, on paper, Tom, based on all the success you've had in so many different avenues, I really shouldn't like you, but you have had a tremendous amount of success. And did Reno help the screenwriting, or did the screenwriting help the Reno part of your career?
I don't know. I mean, I here's where it helped. I mean, what helped screenwriting, certainly being able to act and improvise helps your screenwriting. There's something different, like when I write a script, or, you know, that I've also produced more of my own material than, because I'm a producer and I also direct some of the Reno 911s. But
yeah,
you know, none of my, when I write something for you, it's not really theoretical, you know, like it's different. You know, there's a lot of writers out there who haven't had as much stuff made. And by the way, when you have a lot of stuff made, it's not just I'm saying in a good way, but you get to see like the pitfalls of everything, you know, so you get to learn. I have on the job training for so long. I think I've done my, you know, my 10,000 hours in comedy, like, I don't know, three times, I guess now, or maybe more, but you know, so like, I think the improvising helps the writing. You know, most writing is an improvised conversation with yourself, you know, and
right.
And so it's, if that's a muscle that you get good at flexing, and it is a thing you can practice and get better at. Writing in general is a thing you can practice and get better at, same as improvising.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so I think improvising makes you a better writer. I don't think the screenwriting has ever really helped Reno, except for the fact that everyone thinks Reno's improvised, and somewhat it is. But there's also a very carefully crafted outline for every single episode and most scenes. We never go out in the like field and are like, hey, let's see what, let's goof around until something happens. Yeah, that's never ever what we do.
That does not surprise me at all that you say that, because there are shows that have this reputation of being all improv. And, you know, oftentimes I watch these shows that are critically acclaimed and I go, they need a script. It's funny. It's got great moments, but I'd rather see something more concise. And I never got the feeling that Reno, like you just said, did that. You guys always were so on point.
Everybody's like, it's an improv show. It's a show where I think the distinction that we could make that's really true is it's a show where the dialogue is improvised.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the other reason, weirdly, most cops, I mean, a lot of cops that I meet, obviously they're talking to me, so it maybe ruins the experiment. But a lot of cops say that Reno 911 is the most accurate police show on television.
Oh my gosh, is that beautiful. And,
and I think I realized why at some point. It's like, not because it's always like, everything's horrible and everyone's dumb all the time, but it's just because we don't sound like someone wrote us, you know. We don't sound like we've been carefully honed by a crack team of, you know, just because we're saying the dumbest stuff that can come out of our mouths.
Do you have a script or a project that you wrote maybe an example of each. One that got to the screen as close as possible as to how you envisioned it when you wrote the script, and one as far away from possible that's hard to watch.
Sure. Well, there's, you know, there's a couple, like, the two that I think are a good example of, like, one is just verbatim what we wrote, and that would be like Hell Baby, which is a movie very few people have seen. I'm super proud of it. It's just like a funny horror movie set in New Orleans, but a movie that's almost verbatim the script word for word, close as the page as it could be, is the first Night at the Museum movie.
Wow.
And
really?
The reason is because the movie was going so fast and was in production, but all the special effects people had to start moving very, very quickly. And, you know, they had to have plates and they have to know where the T-Rex is going to be. And there's a lot of moving parts. So I think in a simple way, the problem sometimes with scripts is if you have them for a long time, the studio has them for a long time, they start to fix them. And with Night at the Museum, the finished movie is closer to our first draft of Night at the Museum than anything's ever been, which was really neat. It was just a cool thing to see. And then furthest from what we wrote, that's tough. I mean, you know, I've never, like, there's never been a movie. Well, I will say our very first movie we wrote was called Let's Go to Prison, based on a script we'd written called You Are Going to Prison. And it was a really, really dark, like, prison comedy, and Bob Odenkirk directed it. It was really, really cool. And it had tested so well for a while that they went and shot it like a new ending to make it even better. And then the ending, which we did not write, kind of surprised me in the movie theater. And it was like trying to be real upbeat, but it was just something was really weird about it. And it kind of threw me for a loop. And it ended up, like, the movie was not really a hit, but I remember it was very different. I had seen a cut of it and I was like, wow, this movie's turned out awesome. And then I saw a cut, and then we went to the movie theater and bought a bunch of tickets to go see it. And I was like, oh, this movie's okay. It definitely had changed a lot from when we'd, like, seen the last cut of the movie. So, you know, you got to remember, when you write studio movies, you're a contractor.
Yeah.
You know?
My guest is Tom Lennon. He is a writer, director, producer, actor. You might know him as Reno 911's Jim Dangle. He is with us tonight on Nightlight. Tom, when it comes to comedy, and I'll use a guy thing as a perfect example of this. When that script sold, it got us a ton of meetings. People love the script, and they love it so much, they keep reading it over and over and keep finding things to change. Have you, your experience? Because it was maddening for us.
Yeah. Do you remember there's a great line in my favorite movie about Hollywood called Barton Fink?
Oh, I love it.
Where Tony Shalhoub is talking about the head of the studio, and he's like, he has taken an interest. What did you say to him? Because he has taken an interest. And it's like, suddenly the studio head is very on, is very interested in what he's writing now. And it's like, it ruins everyone's the good time they're having now that people are paying attention. But yeah, you make a good point, which is, you know, familiarity breeds a little bit of contempt. Sometimes you got to be careful, you know, sometimes you just want to be the last person in the room. It's like always, it actually is always helpful sometimes when you're rewriting movies, because people want to hear something new, you know, a new pitch on something. Also, a lot of times when people are making a movie in the studio system, it feels like sometimes people forget what the intention was.
Yes.
There's so much money and there's so many people involved, and everybody starts coming with ideas. And sometimes those ideas, a lot of those ideas are making it better. And a lot of those ideas are just becoming hats on hats on hats on hats. And you can actually start to lose the forest for the trees, you know, and start to kind of, you know, a big thing that in the script doctoring world that I've done my whole career is come in and look at a movie with the studio people and try to remember what they loved about the idea before the last year went by where they basically, you know, that's the other thing. It's like,
hey,
you,
Tom,
you know,
hold that thought 1 second, okay? Oh, sure. We'll pick up there right next. Sure, we got to do a quick thing here. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Tom Lennon's hanging out on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today, I want to talk about the money myth that buying fancy coffees is what's keeping you from being rich. Everything that I know about money and happiness tells me the exact opposite. Treating yourself to a moment of happiness, like a latte, or for me, it's buying one of those little fancy yogurts at the grocery store that come in those cute little ceramic containers, that's probably not keeping you from reaching your money goals. If it feels like you're not where you want to be with your money, take a hard look at your finances and make a budget that you know you're going to stick to. In your budget, you get to choose the places to cut back on spending. You get to decide if that latte or that fancy yogurt is worth the cost. And sometimes for me, it really is. Okay, folks, that was today's Work Money Minute. For more everyday money tips, check out Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabe. Welcome back. Tom Lennon is here with us tonight on Nightlight, helping me close down the show here. Tom, you were saying that before. It's kind of like too many cooks in the kitchen. Like everybody wants to make a great film. But
exactly. And sometimes those are made, you know, it's tough to make things with a big committee sometimes. You know what I mean?
Especially comedy, I think.
For sure. You know, it's or what you need, you know, you definitely need like a very strong opinion at the top who can't be messed with, you know,
right.
It's also very handy, you know, it can be tough, and you can see it even in the rooms of the funniest people in the world, which I've been lucky enough to be a part of. I feel like a couple of times where, you know, people are coming in and like, they're going to round table a script or the movie's already done and you've looked at it and you're going to try to fix some stuff. And you know, there's a real tendency to get lost in the weeds in those, you know, where sometimes people are sort of being funny for funny's sake, but there's, you know, there's being funny, there's just saying funny things and doing funny things. And then there's like the entire concept of making a movie funny, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, there's, we talk about it in our screenwriting book a little bit, which is like, there's a lot of guys who've written books about how to write an amazing screenplay, yet none of those guys have ever written a movie that made any money ever.
Right.
Which is, it's literally never happened. The only screenwriting book by people that have ever made a movie that made money is me and my writing partner.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. We had a chapter about that in the book, but it was so mean that we took it out. We were like, but you know, it's like, we're like, look, you wouldn't call somebody who had drawn a bunch of blueprints for houses that never got built, you wouldn't call them an architecture guru. You know, you can't be a guru at something that you've never, you know, like conquered.
Right.
So, you know, it's an interesting racket, the screenwriting racket. You do need to, you know, be ready to take a lot, to not take things personally.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you said point. As you guys got fired off a guy thing. We got fired off every night of the museum movie. At some point, many of them we got hired back on because, you know, the trick is be nice when you get fired, which is basically the secret to everything.
Right.
But
we had there was one moment in the I don't know if you remember how much you remember about a guy thing, but there's a crazy brother-in-law Ray or something, and one of the studio people said, could there be a scene where they got to get Ray? Maybe he's on the Chicago Bears and they have to get him to a game. I'm like, well, yeah, we can write that. It has nothing to do with what's going
that's
on.
That's an entire other movie.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we can do that, but that's a whole other movie.
Tom, you're so great at playing like condescending characters.
Yes.
But off screen, you are like the nicest guy in the world. I love in the Godfather Green Bay, when Lance Barber went up on stage with all his props and you were bringing him up as the MC, Lance said every time you brought him up, you'd say off camera, staying in character, you said, knock him dead, Tubby. And we would just crack up about that. Like, where does that come from? Why are you so good at playing that role? And is it your favorite kind of role to play?
Yeah, it's always good to play the bad guys or the weird guys. I mean, I've always dreamed of doing like Richard the Third. Yeah.
What?
Since I cannot prove a lover, I shall prove a villain. But I don't know. There's something more. I said, knock him dead, chubby, every time.
That's what he said. Yeah. What do you hope to accomplish? Like you've written blockbuster, huge box office successes. Mm-hmm. You're a really respected actor. As you say, you've directed and produced and, you're at a point where a lot of guys, you have no idea, by the way, how many guys that I know from the Midwest who would love to live in Wisconsin because they don't have to be in LA. And yes. So I say,
very
you've
I know
made
how
it.
Lucky I am, yeah.
Yeah. But like, what do you still want to do, Tom? Like, what do you still hope to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I think if you have the same thing that makes you want to do the stuff that I've done and be as persistent as I've been about it, despite, you know, the enormous heartbreaks of being both a writer and an actor that are, you know, 80% of the job is, you know, consistent heartbreak. But I think the way that my brain is just sort of made up, it's like, I'm just not a person who really like takes breaks or takes even really any time off or like, I'm writing a play right now that I'm super excited about. I'm writing the animated version of my novels for DreamWorks Animation.
Nice.
That hopefully should be coming out in the next 3 to 5 years would be a very good timeline for that. But I'm not a person who can relax. So I just hope I keep finding stuff that keeps piquing my interest,
man.
I guess. Yeah,
I'm sure you will, buddy. That's so great. This has been really fun having you on, and
it's been a blast.
Maybe we'll bump into each other at the House of the Rock or something. Either way, tell your folks I said hello. And,
I certainly shall.
Yeah, please don't be a stranger. Love to have you back sometime if you just want to talk some screenwriting. This is
I would
fun.
Love it.
All right.
We're in the same time zone, so it's the greatest.
Absolutely. Are you? We got a few seconds. Anything you want to promote? Anything coming up you want to remind people?
Oh,
about?
Geez. I'm sure. I'm on what? I'm on Animal Control on Fox.
Oh,
currently.
Fantastic! Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So once in a while, I'm not in every single one, but I often show up as Joel McHale's weird, obnoxious brother.
Now that's a good gig. That's awesome, buddy. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Pete.
Have a great night.
A lot of fun.
All right. Later. See ya. Bye. That's Tom Lennon from Reno 911. The writer of The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, Balls of Fury, Hellboy. Good stuff. Do you have a favorite Tom Lennon movie, Conrad?
Well, I would say Night at the Museum is probably my favorite, but he also plays in How I Met Your Mother, a German guy.
Oh, that's right.
That's great.
And that's another one of those roles that he just crushes those, man. That's so cool. This was fun. I remember a scene in Reno 911. Where he was dangled and he was dressed as a woman hanging out with some prostitutes in an alley, and the other cops come up and they're like, "All right, ladies, break it up." And he turns around and they're like, "Oh, dangle." he's like, "I'm working undercover, guys. I got this. You guys can take off." And they're walking away. They're like, "Isn't this his night off?" Like, oh, just really great stuff. And a heck of a good guy. Tom took a couple guys that were in the movie that we were talking about, The Godfather of Green Bay, and when they moved to LA, he looked out for them and even got them a role in a couple things, which I think is really cool. So good guy. Great to have him on the show. I would also like to thank, I'd like to thank you, Conrad.
Well,
can I do that?
All right.
And Tony Boswell too. And thank you for all your texts and participating in Nightlight. We will be back tomorrow night. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight on behalf of Conrad. Good night, Wisconsin.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, it's Wednesday. That means it's time for Public Cervix Announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. If you have a question for the doctor, just send it to janesays@civicmedia.us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
CapTime's Idea Fest is back for a week of powerhouse speakers and sessions exploring important local and national topics. September 15th through the 21st in Madison. This year's guest speakers include Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, former member of Congress Liz Cheney, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and historian Heather Cox Richardson, along with many others. Idea Fest brings together changemakers to discuss Wisconsin's triumphs and failures to help reach a better state. Purchase your tickets today at CapTimesIdeaFest.com to join this premier thought festival.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.